Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 632, several hours after the last episode, where I said that I was going to do a continuation of something. This is part two of whatever part one was about, and I don't really remember. I think we were doing a retake on what, on some stuff that I talked about before. I think we talked a little bit about Zenith, just scratched the surface of the whole concept of Zenith. I am, it's depressing. I just recently signed up for the autism list. It's run by a fellow named Tom, and Tom, I think it's Tom Smith. And, running is kind of an interesting concept in the world of, you know, a forum. I don't know how heavily moderated it is. The less you moderate something, the more interesting it is. So anyway, there's this thing called Autism List, and I've just started getting some mail from it, and you know, everybody's accusing everybody of everybody else of being jerky and weird and stuff like that. Everybody's giving all these weird moral, you know, saying, well, I wouldn't work that way because all of my morals come off the side of a breakfast cereal box. Everybody thinks my morals are wonderful. And I'm the first person to kind of go, are you real? Are you a real person? Or are you one of those fake people that, like, you know, eats apple pie every afternoon? Homemade apple pie by your mother who cooks in a skirt, you know. And you were raised on a farm in Iowa, and blah, blah, you know. And you're just going, you can't be real, you know. I believe in God, America, and being nice to all people of all creeds and colors. And you're going, you have got to be kidding me. Let's just bring out Leave It to Beaver while we're at it, too. Let's all watch Beaver and Wally and, yeah, let's all go see Dad being the great, fantastic guy that he is. Did he ever work? I don't know. We always had pictures of him at home, you know, reading the newspaper, you know, around the breakfast table, as if these people were in a constant state of gorging themselves and reading newspapers. Hi, Dad. Hi, Wally. Hi, Dave. Hi, Dad. You know, and it's like, okay, this is cute. You know, as if everything in the whole world could be solved in a 30-minute television show by Dad's superior moral kind of, well, you know, it was always, I wouldn't say pompous, it was always very patronizing, right? Well, Beaver, we know that people shouldn't do that. And it's like, well, yeah, duh, are we going to do another, yeah, blah, duh, or yeah, podcast guy, you know, I don't know if I can handle too many of those anywhere near each other. But yeah, you know, it was almost like, what? You know, somebody said that maybe autistic people were superior. And then some person says, oh no, we're all exactly the same. To which I say, well, that's a bunch of bull. Pucky. What kind of weird pandemic? I mean, who brainwashed you like that? Have you looked around? Do you see equality? And now, I don't mean equality like from the government, which is also a farce, but one could maybe pull that off in an ideal world. But the whole point that everybody's equal? What? What kind of garbage is that? Of course they're not equal. They're stupid people, they're smart. You know, and they say, please don't call people stupid. And you go, I'm sorry. If somebody behaves stupidly, you have to say what you did was stupid. That was a stupid thing to do. I know you think, well, it's important to make sure that you call the thing stupid and not the person. And you go, I understand, we're trying to make people feel nice. I said, but sometimes, you know, it says that's all well and good when we're all sitting in school and trying to sing Kumbaya, okay? It says, but when you're out in the real world facing difficult choices and situations, and Joe Stupid makes a suggestion and then feels like you're not treating his stupid suggestion with enough respect, and it's like, I'm sorry, could you please drag that guy out and flog him while the people who actually have an understanding of what's going on here can actually kind of ferret out what we should do? You know, you don't go asking a random 3-year-old to solve the world's problems, because she will probably give you some very immature answers. And I'm not saying that she might not come up with an answer that everybody says, oh, wow, she cut through all the garbage there by just saying, we should just go and learn to get along with each other. And it's like, okay, tell that to Gaddafi. Tell that to this guy. Tell that to that guy. You know, Ahmadinejad. I don't know. These guys seem to be okay within their own realms, but there's some people they don't like. And they don't want to get along particularly, because getting along usually means capitulating. And you shouldn't capitulate all the time to the most strong person. I'm from the United States, and I think you should do it this way. And if you don't think you should do it that way, well, I'll send a lot of bombers, a lot of missiles, and... what do you think now? Do you think it'd be a good idea to just do it my way? And you go, you know what? No. No, I'm not going to do it your way, Mr. American. Just because you think you run the whole universe and that everybody just needs to be bowing down to your will. You know, that's what I'm talking about. And that's why, you know, when people start talking about being offended, as soon as somebody says, that offends me, it's like, oh no, we've got the wrong person here. We need to either let them, you know, sit in a corner or something, because yeah, let's protect their feelings, but the first order of business is to get them out of the way. Because spending our time fretting their little feelings isn't going to help us solve real problems. You know, the whole issue isn't to make everybody feel good. Oh, if everybody just felt good, everything would be fine. No! That wouldn't be fine. Then we would be run by a bunch of weird, emotional, you know, oh, I don't like the way that feels. I don't think I can do that. We can't do that! Well, let's solve the problem. No, we can't do that! It's like, shut them up! If you can't be a little dispassionate sometimes about things, when there are difficult decisions to be made, that's what it is. You know, but not to say that I'm above feeling. Come on. But I am Zenith. Feeling is something that I often don't do. Zeniths are known for being somewhat dispassionate. That's funny, because I'm actually incredibly passionate. But we've learned from hard experience that showing that passion isn't very helpful. So we've learned how to block that. And we can also just block out the passion and say, let's just get down to brass tacks. What are the conditions? What do we need to do? What are the ramifications? And then make a decision. And we go forward. You know, it might not be the right choice, but then again, it's hard to say what's right. Oftentimes, there is no particular right. There is simply weighing things and hoping that things go better than they are now. You know, that's kind of what I look at. So I really thought the whole... And, of course, I'm not telling you what exactly they were talking about, because it was just pedantic, pissy stuff, honestly. You know, it was mostly about definitions of words, about being respectful. And you go, you know what, honestly, I guess I'm more of a bomb lobber than a let's all get together and find a way that we can all, you know, have a group hug and we can all kiss each other and you know, take off our shoes and massage each other's feet. You know, that's all very nice and that's great, and I can see where that has a place when there's intractable differences between people. But you know what? When there really are intractable differences between people, those things don't help. We can be as understanding as we want, but they go, you know what? But that's not going to change my mind. That's the way it's going to be. You know, we need to protect our interests. And if you're not interested in helping us protect our interests, then we're not seeing eye to eye. And it, you know, and it may come down to war and stuff like that. I don't think we should ever fight war, because it's usually somebody trying to oppress somebody else. Right now in our nation, in our world, in the year 2008, the most oppressive people around are, I'm sorry to say, Americans. We've invaded two countries already. We'd love, well, I'd need to make sure that this whole term of we needs to be careful. The government wants to invade a third. It's just kind of fishing around waiting for the perfect opportunity to start a freaking war with Iran. Oh, we want it so bad, we can taste it. Oh, we. Okay, I'm sorry about that. The government wants it. Those in power really want this to happen. And most people are going, why are we doing this? What is the point? Well, we're going to save Iraq. And you go, no, we're just going to make a larger, wider, nastier conflict. And we're not going to fix anything in Iraq. Iraq's not going to get fixed. It's just going to get engulfed in a much larger war. And we always ask, you know, why are we doing this? What the heck is going on? What? Duh. Why are we doing this? Anyway, so This all comes up because it's something that I heard, you know, semantic ideologists. No, we need to say this word and this word. That's why I came up with Venus in the first place. It tries to set all that crap to rest by just saying, here's a new word, here's what it means. Here's the take it comes. If you like it, use it. If you don't like it, you can keep on, you know, pissing in the wind all day long while you're trying to win some kind of argument about what the proper usage should be for using the word autistic or autism or whatever you come up with. They gave this word called Genii. G-E-N-I-I. What the heck does that mean? Is that like genus? Plural? They were almost using it as if it were like a label for autistic people. You know, Asperger's or something. And they were getting all off about what the difference between being an Audi and being an Aspie is. And nobody has one. They both of the terms, Asperger's syndrome and autism syndrome. Well, I don't know if it's a syndrome. Autism. They developed in different universes, you know, in different continents by different people. They may have been looking at the same thing. They may not have. And when they collided, they decided to start making some distinctions. But that's fuzzy, too. A lot of people say, oh, no, it's all autism, or, oh, no, there's some definite, clear differences. And you go, you know what? I don't see it. Half the time, I don't see it. So, you know what? Let's just say that it was confusing. And when there's confusion, you need to go in another direction. Because trying to hash out terms that don't mean the same thing are just garbage. Call it Fred. And then give Fred a specific definition. If people fit it, they can say, ah, my name's Fred! You know, and then you can kind of get some kind of an idea. Oh, hey, those are the Freds over there. Freds, what are Freds? Oh, here, let me show you the definition. Instead of what we have now, which is, well, they, you know, they got diagnosed with Asperger's, but he's basically fighting that because he thinks he's really more of classical autism. And then somebody comes back and goes, oh, that's just not true. That's a bunch of garbage. He's so asty, it stinks. It hurts. It's like, oh, come on, you people. You're so busy trying to find the right label for somebody else to give you that you think fits your you know, your worldview better. It doesn't have much to do with truth. It mostly has much to do with politics. Oh, you're not part of our group. You're not part of us, so you need to stay away. You're jerks. We hate you. We hate all Aspies. It's like, golly, get a grip. You guys are, you know, can't you guys, you know, you guys should play war games or something to work out these weird frustrations. You know, do that. Let's all just go to all the meetings together, pony up the money, and let some guy with letters after his name get filthy rich off of us while we go to therapy or something. Better yet, why not just skip the therapy and, you know, go have fun. Go play the video games. God, man. Why do we have to get weird about all these definitions trying to make people understand us? I went through that phase. I think I'm almost past it now. I hope so. If not, I'm going to continue to work on it. Because it's dumb. All this stuff talking about oneself and being so darn self-centered. It's all about me. It's all about what's important to me. And I have problems with that. I'll tell you, if that's an autistic trait, then that's probably one of the things that are saying, boy, has he got autism? Well, nobody's business. Or Asperger's or whatever. ADHD with a chaser. Like, you know, whatever. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I'm going to have to be, because let me tell you, if you open your mouth and you say the word autism, half the group is going to jump up and start screaming at you. You're not respecting us properly. It's like, you know what, I'm tired. I've tried to seek truth, and what I have learned is that seeking for truth is at its base disrespecting people. Because there's a lot of people that aren't really interested in the truth. Or only interested in whatever smells true at one point, you know, whatever they hope is true. Of course, then again, you go, well, you know what, are we ever going to reach truth? And you go, you know, I'm not really sure on this. At some point in the future, I hope that we can find the truth. I don't mean just the consensus. What definition wins? That's always kind of what happens, too. It really isn't that everybody just settles down and says that this is the truth. You know, it ends up being a big fight, and whoever was the biggest and the strongest or had the most convincing argument or whatever else. And not even that. Maybe just the person that had the, you know, the biggest, I don't know, penis. Like, maybe he won. And he gets to define what the truth was. I really don't know what the criteria is that could be something just as infantile as that. And I'm sorry I had to use that word, but it just happened to be the one that popped in, and it wasn't immediately, you know. No, it was kind of offensive, but I don't mind being offensive sometimes. If it helps to just make people go, oh, it's like, good, that means you're paying attention. Otherwise, you're not paying attention. If I'm speaking, I'm just assuming you pay attention to what I was saying. If I'm speaking to nobody, well, you know, why bother talking? Nobody's not listening to you, Jay. Like, okay, that's fine. Whatever. You can turn the channel to something else. I can keep blabbering on and on and on, but who cares? Because, you know what, you're not listening. That's okay. Cool. I mean, you know, it's kind of rude to come to a meeting where they said, the head of the speaker today is going to be Jay Demerol, and everybody knows what Jay thinks because everybody listened to his podcast, and they're all liquored up and pissed off now, and they're ready to really give Jay a run for his money. And you go, okay, but see, the whole point is Jay's going to say something, and, you know, if there's time, you know, people are going to respond. Jay's a jerk! Jay's an idiot! I hate Jay! Like, okay, that's, you know, that's fine. At least you came knowing that you were going to hear a speech from me. That's the whole point. Am I all good and riled up now? I guess so. Is that a Zenith trait? I don't know. See, but I've always said that I am a Zenith, and since I'm really the only person who's ended up really trying to work on trying to define what a Zenith is, and I get to make these definitions, and usually it's however Jay behaves. The way Jay behaves and the way he thinks defines what a Zenith is. And, you know, I've played around with things like being really obsessive, which I think is a good thing. I mean, in politics, it's almost, you know, it's sometimes in politics, you can get more votes if you have shifting obsessions. I'm going to fight till the day I'm dead to make sure that every woman can have an abortion. You know, and he'll be obsessed about it, right? Oh, yes, everywhere I go, abortion, abortion, abortion is the greatest thing in the world. Makes people free, makes them feel good, makes them feel control their bodies. And then all of a sudden, you know, if poll numbers change, all of a sudden their old obsession kind of shifts. Well, for the majority of American people, they don't like abortion. They think you're killing a little baby. And you know what? Well, I think that since the majority of them think that way, I think they're right. By golly, that's the most important thing I think I've ever talked about, is how important it is never to kill those little itty-bitty babies while they're in the womb. Because they're alive, and they're living, and everybody, and they're wiggling, and they're dancing. And by golly, if you killed something like that, you may be killing the next Ben Vereen or something. I'm sorry. Okay, now I'm a racist. All right, I'm a racist too. I don't think I am, but I just happen to say the name Ben Vereen, and I guess if that happens, I must be a racist if I bring that up, because I don't want the next little Ben Vereen type kid to die. Well, you're talking about black people. So why not? I might not be. Okay, how about the next, I can't think of a white hoofer right off the bat. Is that bad? Maybe I am racist. Nice. That's okay, though, because I'm not, and if you think I am, well, you're wrong. Okay. Has Jay gotten crazy enough yet? This should be the crazy one. The first one wasn't crazy. I was being all nice and pretty. And now I'm not. I'm being kind of jerky. And I'm having fun doing it. Because honestly, you know what? You gotta have some fun. I'm gonna check my email here. Just to say I can. Why didn't it do the unlock for me? There we go. View. Here we got. Ag Dean, interim correction. Some Dinus Briggs, he's in charge of all things physical down south. Interim administrators. Edmund Gomez. Ron Parker, no subject. Ron never puts a subject on anything. With livestock responsibilities. Okay. Now I've got my... Where's my IMAP? There it is. My brother! Burke and Huff family. Janet, I was looking at your data for John Huff. He shows his wife was Hannah June Gore. My desk got from Mom shows his wife was Rosanna Gore. And then he had two other sons, John and Henry. Found at Answers.com yet another version. Oh my gosh. See how difficult these ancestry issues are? They just boggle the freaking mind. You know, my family's interesting enough. A lot of them came from the South. Oklahoma, Kentucky. And they were rather small town, very small town. My grandfather had many siblings. The number 12 comes to mind. I'm not sure if that's the right number. But a lot of brothers and sisters. And my grandmother, his wife, when they got divorced, which was odd at the time they did it, I think it was in the 50s, they, when she got remarried, she married the husband of her ex-husband's sister. Is that kind of, I mean, that's not inbreeding. These people were not not closely related blood-wise, but it tends to make things, your family tree doesn't look like a tree. It looks like a family lattice. Everybody's connected, you know? And it's just a little unnatural, in a way. I don't think it's bad, but it's odd. My family tree starts twisting and coming back on itself. And you know when a tree does that, that usually doesn't spell good things. Unless, you know, there may be some weird exotic variety from some foreign clime somewhere. And maybe that's a good definition of my family, is kind of a exotic thing from someplace else. Someplace foreign and strange and different. And that's a good definition for Zenith too, is, you know, a little off kilter, you know. All their oars aren't hitting the water at the same time. All, you know, their elevator doesn't hit all the floors. Misses a few. Always. Stuff like that. And, you know, makes you wonder. Makes you wonder sometimes what your ancestors have done to you. But I'm grateful. I'm grateful for them because through their diligence, I'm here. And I have the somewhat interesting heritage ancestry that I have. Certainly makes for some pretty interesting stories that I can tell to you if you will only call me and say, "Jay, tell us interesting stories of your ancestry." And I will make half of them up. But I'll try to make them entertaining. Whether they're true or not. Why not? And the phone number is 1-575-461-2716. You can tell I'm tired, can't you? I get more interesting, and I think much more fun, when I'm starting to kind of wind down. The afternoons are better for me, from just a raw entertainment value standpoint, from the REV. Anyway, you can contact me, 1-575-461-2716. If you just don't have the resolve, I don't want to call it a lack of courage, but, you know, you might not be able to do well on the phone. I understand that. I used to really stink on the phone. I can't say I do a lot better. I certainly don't have what you would consider to be typical etiquette. And I'll tell you why. The first reason why is that whenever I say hello and I start talking, I don't have to announce who I am. They all know who I am. Hello, hello, Jay. See, everybody knows. And I say it too. I said, "You knew who I am, don't you?" "Yes, Jay, you're very distinct." And it's like, oh, I never intended to be this way. I really didn't. Some people say I'm too loud. And I have to agree with them only because my wife, who loves me and wants to help me, she also says I'm too loud. And my children, they tell me I'm too loud, too. A couple of days ago, one of my oldest, Shayna, she's 17, she's getting ready to leave home. She decided she needed to straighten something out. She saw a problem, and she decided to take me to task. How dare she? I'm her father, for Pete's sake. But when push came to shove, after I got done being all kind of blustery and rah, 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 you're wrong, I figured out that she was right. And that I needed to do better. And my wife appreciates it because she said, yeah, Shane is right, Jay. You need to give a person a chance to butt in edgewise. Which is why I said I'd better go out and become a speaker. That's why I said, okay, I need to be a writer, lecturer, and speaker. They're always speaking. They're always taking the floor and never giving it back until the speech is over and things like that. And there it is. You know, it's perfect for me, but then again, when I do it at home, I take all kinds of problems for it. My mother, whom we are pretty sure I inherited this trait from, because sometimes she does it too. I don't think as much as I do. She doesn't have quite the audience I have. You know, there's 8 people in my family. The other 7 end up having to listen to me or wander off. Most of them have taken the wiser choice of wandering off. A couple of my kids choose to stick around, and then they tell me to shut up and quit talking so much. Give somebody else a chance to say something. And it's like, well, why don't you act like the other ones? Why don't you just walk away? If you don't like it, leave. It's like, well, I guess they're really wanting to make your point, too. They must be my children. They must have inherited this need to talk from me. I just won't let them. And that's why I said, you need to get your own family, and then you can treat them like this. That's part of the fun of being an adult, is that you can do all this stuff. And you know, they can complain about it if they want to, but you don't have to listen. When you're a child, you know, your parents can pretty much do whatever they want. And you have to put up with it. Anyway, my mom had suggested once, since she has my same malady of mouth, she suggested that we get soap boxes. Now, I don't know the etymology of the soap box, but I do know that if you are going to go and speak to, like, a crowd of people on a street corner, for instance, which I have considered doing, but I know that that's not acceptable anymore, and the fact that there aren't large groups of people that congregate on street corners in very many places anymore. You would take a soap box, and you would put it down, and you would step up on it so that people could see you, so that you could orate, I guess. I guess that's what you call what I do, orating. Maybe you just call it, you know, spewing forth from the mouth if you didn't really respect what was being said, which is, you know, somewhat within people's purview to be able to say that. Anyway, so she suggested that we needed to both get soap boxes. And I found another purpose for it, honestly. I don't know if you really want to know this or not, but that's okay. I've got the microphone. If you don't want to listen, you can just switch it off. But there's more entertainment to be had, as always. Come on. The better use for the soap box, and I think my wife does this just because that when we're kissing each other, she is somewhat shorter than I am. Round about 9 or 10 inches shorter than I am. Kissing, when we're standing up, is tricky. I have to bend over a long way. She has to stretch up and bend her neck, and it's not pleasant. We've gotten around to, you know, we like doing our kissing on stairs, because I can be on a lower step, she can be on a higher step, and we can kiss. Soapbox is good for that, so I want to get a soapbox, if only for the reason that Lisa can use it so she can enjoy kissing me more. Because she does. She loves kissing on the stairs. Because it's not so traumatic to her back. Who wants to have pain when you're trying to kiss and enjoy it? See, I told you it would be good. Maybe. Maybe you don't think so. Whatever. So I need to get a soapbox that needs to be of a good size. I'm thinking about 9 inches. That's pretty tall for a soapbox. Has to be pretty sturdy. I'm not a light person, you know. I don't consider myself particularly fat, but I'm not skinny. I'm about 6'3", and I've weighed anywhere between 250 and 280 for a while. I fluctuate depending on how much biking I get to work and back. So I need a pretty sturdy one, you know, not just your run-of-the-mill soapbox. I need one made out of some pretty good hunks of wood. Lift me up high enough, not only so that I might speak more eloquently. You always speak better when you are atop your soapbox. But that I might be at the perfect height for my wife. Or that I might place my wife upon this wonderful pedestal of the soapbox so that she might all the more easy, but that's not even good English, all the better to kiss me easier. Still not very good. Anyway, so that's what we're all about. That's what I'm having fun talking about today. But I think this thing has gone long enough. I'm not sure I really got into anything. Should I stretch it out to a part 3? Just for fun? Should I make it like that? Should I continue in my present vein? Because I do need to talk about some other things. Destroying with your strengths and kind of mitigating your weaknesses type of thing. It's an intriguing idea that never really got much traction, I'm sorry to say. After I read the book, I thought the concept was good, but where they ultimately took it, I thought was less than inspiring. But anyway, this is Jay Nimro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. We've had an interesting episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If not for the lack of information, but hopefully just for the interesting presentation. This is Jay Nimro. Let me make sure I've got my mouse. There he is. And episode number 600. Oh, my gosh. 632. Have a great day.